Italy says it has completed its troop pullout from Afghanistan one day after a similar announcement by Germany as part of a planned withdrawal of NATO forces. Also coming up, the Russian president says last week's trespassing of a British warship on Russian territorial waters in the Black Sea was a deliberate provocation to test Moscow's military response. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The Spanish Prime Minister has ruled out any independence referendum in Catalonia, saying that the ruling party will never accept what he called a deviation. Speaking to Parliament, Pedro Sanchez also said that the only option for independence supporters is to convince three-fifths of the lower house to modify the constitution. Moreover, he said Spain as a whole must ratify this change via referendum. This would currently be impossible since most lawmakers are opposed to such a reform. This as the government prepares to resume negotiations with pro-independence Catalans in September. Last week, Sanchez pardoned nine Catalan leaders who were jailed for their part in the region's failed push for independence in 2017. Catalonia's referendum provoked one of the worst political crises in the country since the 1970s. Italy has completed the pullout of its troops from Afghanistan as part of an accelerated NATO withdrawal from the war-torn country. The Defense Minister Lorenzo Guerini confirmed that the Italian mission has officially come to an end. Based on the ministry's figures, some 50,000 troops were deployed to the country over the course of 20 years. Germany has already withdrawn its 1,100 troops from the country. The U.S.-led NATO mission agreed to pull 9,600 troops out of Afghanistan in April. That after the U.S. President Joe Biden issued the call to end Washington's longest war, pledging to fully withdraw American forces by September 11th. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed since the U.S. and its allies invaded the country under the pretext of fighting terrorism. Nearly two decades of the U.S. military presence has failed to bring peace to the country. The Russian president says last week's trespassing of a British warship on Russian territorial waters in the Black Sea was a clear and deliberate provocation to test Moscow's military response. Speaking during a televised question and answer session, Vladimir Putin also accused the U.S. of being behind the incident. He noted that based on observations, a U.S. spy jet was operating in sync with the UK destroyer to monitor Russia's defensive capabilities. Asked if the confrontation could have provoked World War III, the Russian leader rejected such a possibility. Putin said the Western powers know that they could not emerge as winners of such a war.
You have said that the world was on the verge of the world war. Of course not. Even if you had sunk the British destroyer near Crimea, it's unlikely that the world would have been on the verge of World War III. Those who do it know that they cannot emerge the winners of this war.
Tensions mounted after Britain's HMS Defender ventured through Russian waters off the coast of Crimea last Wednesday. Russia said its forces fired warning shots and dropped bombs to deter the vessel. The UK, however, said that the ship was conducting what it called an innocent passage through Ukrainian waters. Russia has already put its air defense on high alert amid ongoing war games by Ukraine and NATO countries in the Black Sea. The U.S. has resumed trade talks with Taiwan after a five-year stalemate despite China's objections. Top trade officials from Washington and Taipei held talks virtually on Wednesday. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative said the discussion focused on enhancing trade and investment ties. The talks resumed after the two sides reconvened the Trade and Investment Framework Agreement Council that stopped meeting after President Donald Trump took office in 2016 and engaged in a trade war with China. However, the administration of President Joe Biden has pushed ahead with plans on increasing ties with Taiwan, challenging China's sovereignty over the island. Beijing, which considers Taiwan its own territory under the One China policy, has time and again warned the U.S. of any interference and manipulation in the island's affairs. Political commentator Jason Unruha says the resumption of U.S. trade talks with Taiwan indicates Washington wants to undermine the existing One China principle.
The United States has never shied away from the fact that it is trying to prop up Taiwan as an independent country, despite the fact that in the past, Taiwan applied to be recognized as the official China, which was later rejected by the United Nations. Now, of course, Taiwan as a country came into existence after the U.S. essentially stole it from mainland China following the Communist Revolution in 1949 by sending warships into the strait in order to make sure that the expanding influence of the Communist Party did not reach the island itself. However, the U.S. has been on a policy of undermining China for some time now. This has been going on for about a decade, maybe even longer. There's been great there were great accelerations under the former President Donald Trump, and this is just another manifestation of that. I mean, Taiwan is particularly important to the U.S. It's the ninth largest trading partner overall, seventh largest when it comes to agricultural exports, and they did about $90 billion in trade last year. So that is something significant that they would certainly want to hold on to while undermining China's desire for sovereignty over the island at the same time.
Iran's president has slammed the U.S. administration for continuing what he calls its economic terrorism against the Iranian nation. Hassan Rouhani says U.S. President Joe Biden is still waging, quote, an economic war that his predecessor Donald Trump started against Iran. Rouhani says Biden is committing the same crimes that Trump did by blocking Iran's access to drug and foodstuff through sanctions. The Iranian president has blasted Biden for going back on his election campaign promise to rejoin the 2015 nuclear deal and lift sanctions on Iran. Iranians have gathered outside of the French embassy in the capital Tehran to protest France's hosting of an anti-Iran terrorist group. The protesters included families of the victims of the massive bomb attack carried out by the terror outfit Mojahedin Khalq Organization, or MKO, in Tehran on the 28th of June 1981. The bombing killed over 70 Iranian politicians, including then-Judiciary Chief Sayed Mohammad Beheshti. The protesters called on France to either extradite MKO members to Iran or put them on trial for the deadly attack.
We are here to make our voices heard to the world. 40 years have passed since the assassination of Beheshti and his comrades, but no justice has been administered. Their families are still mournful. I want France to either give us MKO members or prosecute them.
The French government has to be answerable for harboring those who committed crimes in our city 40 years ago. They have to be tried inside France or be extradited.
Iran says MKO is responsible for killing some 12,000 people, yet the U.S. and its European allies do not consider the group a terrorist organization. Iran has marked the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of the Iran's Islamic Republic Party by the U.S.-backed Mojahedin Khalq, a terror organization known as MKO. Occasion is marked every year as part of week-long ceremonies dubbed the American Human Rights Week, Yusuf Jalali reports.
Rights activists, along with families of terror victims in Iran, attended this gathering in Tehran to mark the American Human Rights Week. The annual occasion aims to shed light on the U.S.'s record of rights violations in Iran.
We're marking the American Human Rights Week to review the numerous cases where the U.S. openly violated human rights in our country, like the American Navy's downing of our passenger plane in 1988, after which the perpetrators received a badge of honor in the U.S. The latest crime the U.S. has committed was to assassinate the spearhead of the fight against terrorism, General Qasem Soleimani.
The second day of the week-long occasion marks the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of the Iran Islamic Republic Party in Tehran by the U.S.-backed Mojahedin Khalq terror organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials of the Islamic Republic were killed, including former Justice Chief Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Beheshti.
Iran says it has lost over 17,000 people in terrorist attacks. 12,000 of them were killed at the hands of the formidable MKO terrorist group. What's even more shocking is that the U.S. does not regard the MKO as a terrorist entity, and has even established intimate ties with them.
The U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist organization. Following this measure, the group was relocated from its former stronghold at a U.S. military base in Iraq to Albania and France. Ever since, the MKO has held regular meetings with American and European officials.
Members of U.S. Congress regularly meet MKO leaders where they offer any kind of support to the terrorist group. The U.S. is still supporting the terrorists in their anti-Iran campaigns. The MKO killed our top nuclear scientists, and that was not possible without the U.S. and Israel's assistance.
I lost my husband in the 1981 bombing of the Islamic Republic Central Office by the MKO.
Interestingly, the spearhead of the terrorist operation, whose real name is Ali Mohtamed, took refuge in the Netherlands, and they welcomed him until a few years ago, when the MKO disposed of him as a lost cause.
The American Human Rights Week started on June 27th, which marks the anniversary of the failed assassination of the then-Iranian president Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by the MKO terrorists in 1981, and will end on July the 3rd, which coincides with the anniversary of the U.S. Navy's shooting down of an Iranian passenger plane in 1988. Organizers of the occasion say the ultimate goal of the week-long ceremonies is to expose the U.S.'s double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iranian naval forces have launched military drills in the Caspian Sea. Military officials say the drills aim to promote maritime security and send a message of peace across the Caspian Sea region. Different types of surface and flight units are taking part in the military exercises. Missile launchers, fixed-wing planes, helicopters, and electronic warfare systems are being used. Iran is holding its naval drills in an area of over 77,000 square kilometers in the waters of the Caspian Sea. Different defensive and offensive scenarios are implemented with the aim of protecting the country's territorial waters and preserving its transit routes. The Yemeni army says it has launched a missile attack against sensitive military targets in the country's Ma'rib city. The army says that it used ballistic missiles to hit those targets. It said dozens of Saudi-backed forces, including several military commanders, were killed or wounded. The Yemeni army dismissed allegations that its operations in Ma'rib targets civilians in residential areas. Ma'rib has witnessed fighting between the Yemeni army and forces loyal to the Saudi-backed former regime in the past several months. Members of the Ansarullah movement are also helping the army in its operations to retake Ma'rib. The city is the last stronghold of the former regime loyalists.
The crisis in Yemen is deepening as fresh fierce clashes between Yemeni forces and Saudi-led militants have erupted in Ma'rib. The clashes happened between Yemeni forces and Allied Popular Committees fighters and their rival forces who are loyal to former President Abdurrahman Mansur Hadi. Local sources say the Yemeni troops and Allied Popular Committee fighters mounted intensive attacks from the north, south, and west to push the Saudi mercenaries out of the region. Saudi warplanes are reported to have conducted more than a dozen strikes on residential areas across the region.
Well, it clearly shows that the Ansarullah movement cannot be defeated. And that's what's so important, that Saudi Arabia, with all of its vast military equipment and years of U.S. support, military aid, jet aircraft, naval blockades, have failed to defeat the Ansarullah movement. And as a matter of fact, have suffered one defeat after another.
Over the past few weeks, Ma'rib has been the scene of large-scale operations by Yemeni troops and their allied forces. They are pushing against Saudi-sponsored pro-Hadi militants. Yemeni forces are closing in on Ma'rib, the last stronghold of pro-Hadi forces in northern Yemen. The loss of the strategic region would mean the defeat of the Saudi-backed regime. Yemeni forces had earlier liberated several strategic heights in the northwest of the province after intense fighting. Analysts believe control of the oil-rich region of Ma'rib would strengthen the bargaining position of Yemeni forces in peace talks. The fierce clashes come amid fresh attempts to bring an end to what the UN has described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Analysts believe Saudi Arabia is desperate to find a face-saving way out of its disastrous bombing campaign in Yemen. It is believed that the Saudi regime has failed miserably in Yemen, as its foreign interventions have failed to produce desirable results for the kingdom.
Clearly, it shows that Saudi Arabia could not prevail through military measures. So now they are talking about, let's have a peace agreement. But they're asking for many things that they could not win on the battlefield. So whether they will gain it in peace talks, that's highly unlikely.
When it comes to peace talks, the National Salvation Government has outright rejected the Saudi peace offer. It accuses Riyadh of refusing to open the airport and to give unhindered access to Hodeidah port, which the main entry point for most of the food imports to Yemen. The West, however, accuses Ansarullah, not Saudi Arabia, of sabotaging the peace talks.
The new administration in Washington has pushed for fresh attempts to bring the war to an end, but Yemeni forces have dismissed the so-called peace initiatives presented by the U.S. to end the war in the country, saying such plans are not favorable since they fail to include the Yemeni nation's demands, including lifting the siege on the port city of Aden.
The UN is acting in favor of major powers and exhibits clear bias. The aggressor countries are committing the most heinous crimes against Yemeni children, and yet they were not included in the list. The UN decision is disconnected from realities and does not rely on independent accounts.
Any peace agreement must be based on ending the siege, the closing of the ports, and the distribution of food to the population of Yemen, who've been held hostage by Saudi Arabia and also by the U.S. through this whole process.
Ansarullah Movement says no just solution to the humanitarian crisis in Yemen has been worked out yet. The Yemenis say the aggressors have to end all their attacks against Yemen, take out all their forces, end an all-out siege that they have been imposing on the Arab country, including the port city of Aden, and compensate the victims before entering any peace process.
Well, they certainly have no desirable result. They first announced that this would be a war over in a matter of weeks and then months, and it has dragged on for more than 6 years. So it's a complete disaster in the eyes of the entire region. It does show the weakness of this corrupt regime that is unable to carry on a war against a country far less technologically, doesn't have the means, doesn't have the military forces, and yet it has a mobilization of the people. And that is what is decisive again and again, as we're finding in every country.
Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies have been engaged in a devastating war in the country that began in March 2015. They were backed by the U.S. and other Western powers. The aggressors were trying to reinstall Yemen's former president, Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi, a staunch ally of Riyadh, to crush the Ansarullah Movement. The Saudi war has failed to achieve its goals, but pushed Yemen to the brink of a humanitarian crisis. Saudi officials claimed that the war would last only a few weeks.
The UN report says global economy could lose over $4 trillion due to impacts of COVID-19 on tourism. The report says last year alone, worldwide drops in tourist arrivals resulted in more than $2 trillion in economic loss. It says the same amount is expected this year, depending on the distribution of COVID vaccines. The UN report says things would be harder for developing countries as they face vaccine inequality. It says these countries have already seen a 60 to 80% decline in tourist arrivals last year. Recently, some nations have eased travel curbs following mass vaccination programs. But the UN report says international tourism is not expected to return to pre-pandemic levels until 2023 at the earliest. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Educators and institutions from around the world have come forward
as part of a vibrant and growing international movement in opposition to Israeli regime colonization and apartheid. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written jointly by Emma Klein and Cameron Payne, authors. This article is published under the heading Seattle Teachers Stand with Palestine. Stay tuned for more. In response to the ongoing Israeli regime colonization, occupation, and bombardment of Gaza, the West Bank, and East Al-Quds on June 14, 2021, Seattle Education Association, C, representatives passed a new business item, NBI, in solidarity with the people of Palestine. Rooted in the principles of justice, human rights, and equality, the recommendation endorses the Palestinian call to boycott, divest, and sanction, or BDS movement, the Israeli regime, and the end the deadly Exchange Seattle campaign. The NBI passed by a 90% yes vote of Representatives Assembly. As Palestinian educators and members of C, they stand in strong support of this monumental recommendation. Palestinians are enduring a brutal Israeli regime occupation that has crushed the lives of millions of Palestinians and expelled hundreds of thousands from their homes. This issue may feel far away, but it is anything but. U.S. law enforcement agencies, including the Seattle Police Department, have participated in exchanges with Israeli regime forces, training with them on policies such as surveillance, restrictions of movement, repression of social movements, torture, and violence. We see these tactics carried out by the SPD in the horrific murders of Charlina Lies, Terry Carver, Derek Hayden, Damir Spatz, Isaiah Obed, Tommy Lee, Eugene Nelson, Robert J. Lightfeather, and countless others who have lost their lives at the hands of the SPD. Gazan students are unable to secure study permits to access educational opportunities in the West Bank, let alone internationally, forcing many students to drop out of school and repressing the academic output of Gaza. Roadblocks and curfews across the occupied territories lead to school closures for months at a time. The Zionist regime detention of Palestinian minors without charge and accountability disrupts Palestinian youth from accessing education and leads to deep trauma. The activist said, "In Seattle, we see trauma at the hands of SPD and the school-to-prison pipeline. BIPOC children and families are disproportionately targeted by police and incarcerated. As an academic institution that claims educational justice for all, it is crucial that Seattle public schools stand with students and families denied their right to education from Seattle to Palestine. This is not complicated at all." They said, "We cannot continue obscuring the power dynamics and systematic racism at play and equating state violence with the retaliation of the powerless. Calling for justice and holding Israeli regime accountable for its behavior."
In the last year, Seattle Public Schools, SPS, released two official statements in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter, BLM, movement. BLM unequivocally stands for an end to incarceration, borders, racism, ethnic cleansing, and police brutality. The Zionist regime is mobilized by incarceration, borders, racism, ethnic cleansing, and police brutality. To stand with the BLM movement is to stand with the principles of the BLM movement in a global context, the activist said. The same way the United States systematically oppresses black lives and people of color, the Zionist regime is systematically oppressing Palestinians, Afro-Palestinians, as well as Jews of color. The Zionist regime is doing this with $4 billion in aid per year from the U.S. regime. Those who identify as Zionists cannot stand for Black Lives Matter. These two things cannot exist at the same time. Historically, some of the most iconic activists for Black Lives have irrefutably stood with Palestine and expressed the importance of Palestinian liberation. The C resolution is not an isolated action. Educators and institutions from around the world have come forward as part of a vibrant and growing international movement in opposition to the Zionist regime, colonization, and apartheid. Weeks ago, the United Educators of San Francisco and chapter chairs of the United Teachers of Los Angeles passed similar resolutions in solidarity with Palestinians. The teachers said, "As C members and educators, we are proud to stand with Palestinian families, faculty, employees, and students of Seattle Public Schools. We will work to ensure that our recommendation is upheld, and we call on brave individuals and institutions like our own to join us. With each step, our movement in support of Palestine is growing."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. We invite you to listen to a short speech by Dr. Shomali.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-Aliyy al-Azim. In order to reach the definition of dhikr from a Quranic perspective, we need to review the Quranic understanding of light, nur. My idea is that dhikr, in the case of creatures, is to reflect light of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala by turning towards Him. Suppose you have a mirror. When this mirror is turning towards sun, for example, or a light, you know, this mirror reflects the light of the sun or the light which is there, depending on its own capacity and distance. So how much it's close or far, how is the size, then the degree of reflection of the light is decided. Some may reflect more, some may reflect less. Some may reflect completely, some may reflect not completely, only some aspects. But even if they reflect completely, it doesn't mean perfectly. For example, suppose I am in front of a mountain and I have a mirror. From distance, I can see all the mountain in this. The peak of it, the middle of it, the bottom of it, I can see in this mirror from distance, like a picture. So I see all parts of the mountain completely, but not perfectly, because very small and lots of, you know, details might not be there. There are creatures of Allah who reflect Him completely, but not perfectly. It's depending on their capacity, they reflect all His beauties and all His glory, but as much as a creature, a finite being can reflect. They are Asma'ullah At-Tammat. They are complete names of God, but very limited way, of course. There's a still big difference between infinite and finite being. In any case, every creature, when like a mirror, is turning towards God. And this turning is not physical. This turning is by heart. And this turning has to be by choice. Mirror, you put it in front of something, whether the mirror likes it or doesn't like it, whether mirror is aware or not aware, you know, it doesn't make difference. The mirror doesn't understand, doesn't make decision, is automatically reflecting this object in front of it. But creatures would reflect God by turning either by choice, or if they have no free will in the sense of choosing, in the sense of intikhab, but they do it by their essence. Means there is no force from outside. In philosophy, you know, we say irada is used in two senses. Irada sometimes is by choice, by choosing among different options. For example, in human beings, our will is by choosing. But in angels, irada is not by choosing, because they have only good option. But why we call they are murid? Because they are not forced from outside. They do it as they want it. This is a requirement of it. Or if we go to lower beings, for example, animals, physical objects, in one sense, they don't have irada. Even maybe we think they don't have understanding, they don't have knowledge, etc. They don't have life. Okay, from this, if you look at it this way, then certainly they don't have dhikr. But from Quranic perspective, from at least you can say a malakuti vision at these things, they have life, they have understanding, and they have will. But not in the sense of choosing, in the sense that they do something out of their own internal decision, out of their own essence. If sugar is sweet, this is not ikrah. This is not ikrah. This is not ijbar. This is by essence. So, every creature, either by choice, like human beings, therefore, if they choose and turn towards God, they reflect His light. Other creatures, not by choosing, but by essence or by irade-i zati, by their essential will, like angels or lower beings, they reflect light of God anyway. And من شاين الله يسبح بحمد. They are all remembering Him. They are all praising Him, glorifying Him. It's only human beings and jinns, as far as we know, that they should do it by choice. Therefore, they may do it or may not do it. Of course, even for human beings, for example, their cells, their parts, they are doing, like other things, tasbih of God. They are all taslim and submissive to God. My hair, my skin, my, I don't know, nails, my bones, my flesh, my blood, all are submissive to God. And all are doing zikr of God. Lahu aslama. Everything, fasamawat wa ard, is aslama lahu. Means it's submissive to Him. إِنْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ إِلَّا يُسَبُّهُ. But the only thing is that we, with choice, should turn towards Him. Okay. So, in the case of human beings and jinns, because it is by choice, then if someone doesn't choose that, then he is failing to turn towards God, is failing to do zikr. And if they fail to choose, is either because they don't want to do this, or they have forgotten, they have become heedless. There are people who refuse. أعرض عن ذكري. من أعرض عن ذكري. It seems that أعرض, إعراض, is by decision. من أعرض عن ذكري فإن له معيشة ضنك. وسنحشره يوم القيامة أعمى قال رب لما حشرتني أعمى قال كذلك أتتك آياتنا فنسيتها. This نسيتها is intentional. That إعراض is intentional, because also Allah says كذلك أتتك آياتنا. This was not one incident, two incidents, or without choice. This was your, you know, continuous behavior. كذلك أتتك آياتنا فنسيتها وكذلك اليوم تنسى.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight. According to a draft report issued recently, the United Nations body UNESCO is recommending that Australia's Great Barrier Reef be included on a list of World Heritage in Danger, a move which has been heavily criticised by the Australian government. We're prepared for you an article written by Graham Redfern. The piece is titled Why Australia's Great Barrier Reef May End Up on the World Heritage in Danger List and What It Means. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Janelle Chanona is a former television news anchor in Belize, the tiny Central American country on the Caribbean Sea, famed for its World Heritage Barrier Reef, the second largest on the planet. She said, "When things get really crazy above the waterline, I flee to the sea. Our reef speaks to the identity of every Belizean, and we say that with pride." Earlier this week, UNESCO recommended the planet's biggest, the Great Barrier Reef, should be placed on a list of World Heritage Sites in Danger. Janelle Chanona, who now leads a group of conservationists in the country for Oceania, knows exactly what that means. In 2009, the World Heritage Committee put Belize's Caribbean Jewel on the same list. Illegal fishing, coastal and island developments, and the threat of oil and gas drilling meant the country wasn't doing enough to preserve the site. But just as Australia is now staring down the barrel of a perceived ignominy of the danger tag, Belize now looks back at it. The country, bordered by Mexico and Guatemala, introduced a raft of new laws to stop the disappearance of mangroves, regulate fishing, and outlaw oil and gas exploration. In 2018, the World Heritage Committee scratch the in danger status. Now the Belize government has a new Ministry of Blue Economy and has renewed hope for its reefs. Janelle Chanona says, "We want to stay vigilant now." University of Queensland marine biologist Professor Peter Mumby's career has straddled the two great reefs of Australia and Belize. His wife of 22 years is Belizean. He says the reef is very ingrained in their identity. He says even before Belize hit the danger list, fishermen were seeing the damage from overfishing, particularly on parrotfish that help clean the reef, and were themselves lobbying the government to put restrictions on their catch. Professor Peter Mumby says both reefs are now being hit by climate change, but he worries a danger listing for Australia's Great Barrier Reef could reinforce a wrongly held perception globally that the reef is doomed. He says, but there does need to be that wake-up call to the Commonwealth government, adding, the reef is facing an uncertain future for sure. World Heritage sites are enshrined on the United Nations list for their cultural or natural significance, or sometimes both. There are 53 sites on the World Heritage in Danger list, including Florida's Everglades, Indonesia's Sumatran rainforests, the city of Vienna, and Liverpool's historic waterfront, which could lose its World Heritage status entirely at next month's meeting. Next month's meeting, chaired by China, will decide the Great Barrier Reef status. UNESCO's recommendation is that the Great Barrier Reef should be placed on the in danger list, and the next version of the Queensland and federal government's Cornerstone Joint Reef 2050 policy should be explicit about how Australia will bring greenhouse gas emissions down in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. If the committee accepts the recommendations in full, then UNESCO wants to carry out a monitoring mission to develop a set of corrective measures that would also look at driving improvements to water quality, another key area of concern. Some tourism figures in Queensland fear an in-danger listing will be more bad news that could discourage international visitors from travelling to Australia once borders reopen. Dr. John Day, a former Australian government representative on the World Heritage Committee and a veteran of the meeting, says, "I really think that's a furphy." He says when other sites have been placed on the danger list, there's no indication that visitor numbers went down. He added, "I really think that the international tourists are already well aware of the issue facing the Great Barrier Reef." Some tourism operators point out that there are still many great places to go on the Great Barrier Reef, and visitors are still as awed by their experience as ever. But Dr. John Day says those great areas that operators rightly identify won't continue to be great in the future. He added, "It's really short-sighted perspective. Those great areas are going to be suffering very soon." He says if the Queensland Jewel does find itself on the danger list, there could be positives. It's not just a slap on the wrist, but actually a chance to bring this to the world's attention. Dr. John Day says Australia has always fought criticisms of the World Heritage properties, especially when the threat of an in danger listing is raised. He says Australia lobbied intensively to keep the Northern Territory's Kakadu National Park off the list in 1999, after concerns over uranium mining and its effects on Aboriginal sites. He says that's left a very sour taste in many countries' mouths. People still talk about it. He added, "This should not be about arguing and fighting. It is about the world recognizing that its heritage is under threat and then doing something about it." Professor Tiffany Morrison of James Cook University led research published last year into all the times when the World Heritage Committee has considered putting natural sites, known in United Nations language as properties, on the danger list. Professor Tiffany Morrison found countries such as Australia, with economies dependent on high-value natural resources, regardless of their state of development, tended to push back on UNESCO's recommendations. Professor Tiffany Morrison said if the committee did ignore Australia's pleading this time, an appearance on the in danger list would mean Australia would need to start taking climate policy seriously. She added, "We would hope that climate policy would get Australia back off the in danger list," adding, "I think UNESCO are trying to force Australia's hand. That is why we have these international conventions. They're supposed to have teeth." She said there were two competing forces at play as Australia tries to make its lobbying count. Professor Morrison said, "This is actually about reputational risk, both from Australia and UNESCO's point of view," adding, "The more Australia gets away with its lobbying, the more reputational damage there is to UNESCO." Dr. Simon Cripps, the Executive Director of Marine Conservation at the International Wildlife Conservation Society, says when a site makes its way onto the World Heritage List, as the Great Barrier Reef did back in 1981, it's not the end of a journey. Actually, it's the beginning. He says, "As with your house or your car, sites need constant maintenance to keep them in a healthy condition. Australia is a land of environmental paradoxes, in that their fantastic work to conserve and sustainably manage the marine environment right around their coastline has set an example to so many other countries." He noted, yet it is undermined by their appalling performance on combating climate change that will cause huge environmental damage, social and economic damage to the very coast that they are seeking to protect. Back in Belize, the marine scientist and World Wildlife Fund campaigner Nadia Boud says it took plenty of political will to get her country's reef off the danger list. As a 15-year-old rural farm girl, Nadia Boud had never seen her country's famous barrier reef until she dived in for a school field trip. Boud, from her home in Belize City, says it was just like, wow, it was then I decided to be a marine scientist. She said, as humans, we're dependent on all the species. They allow us to live the life we're living. They give us our food and shelter, and the reef protects us from storms. She added, we have to try and protect them as much as possible. Australia and our reefs are sisters. We can be championing each other.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
I tell you with confidence, the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and it will not stop. May 7th, 2021. Israel is not a country. Another noteworthy point is that although that the usurping regime was established in 1948, the ground for occupying that sensitive Islamic region had been prepared years before that. Studying those events in Iran, Turkey, and Arab countries stretching from West Asia to North Africa reveals this bitter truth that weakness and discord in the Islamic Ummah paved the way for the disastrous usurpation of Palestine, allowing the world of arrogance to deliver that blow to the Islamic Ummah. It is instructive that at that time, the capitalism and communism camps colluded with the rich Zionists. It was the English who masterminded the plot and who persisted in it, and then Zionist capitalists executed it with their money and weapons. The Soviet Union, too, was one of the first governments that officially recognized the establishment of that illegitimate regime and later on dispatched a large number of Jews to that area. The usurping regime was actually an outcome of that situation in the world of Islam on the one hand, and of a European plot, invasion and transgression on the other. Today, the situation in the world is not like those days. We should keep this reality within sight. Today, the balance of power has swung in favor of the world of Islam. Various political and social incidents in Europe and in the United States have laid bare the weaknesses and the deep structural, managerial, and moral conflicts among Westerners. The electoral events in the US and the notoriously scandalous failures of the hubristic and arrogant managers in that country, the unsuccessful one-year fight against the pandemic in the US and Europe, and the embarrassing incidents that ensued, and also the recent political and social instabilities in the most important European countries, are all signs of the downward movement of the Western camp. On the other hand, the growth of the resistance forces in the most sensitive Islamic regions, the development of their defensive and offensive capabilities, their growth of self-awareness, motivation and hope in Muslim nations, the increasing tendency to follow Islamic and Quranic slogans, growth in science and growth of independence and self-reliance in nations are auspicious signs of a better future.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.